Today's critique examines an academic white paper by Dr. Bashara Saheli exploring the hidden environmental and social metabolisms of artificial intelligence through a life coherence framework. I'm excited to jump into this one, but I know we have some immediate thoughts on the overall architecture.
Streamlining the multiple diagnostic frameworks would significantly enhance the paper's cognitive flow and overall impact. Because while the theoretical framework here is just incredibly strong, the delivery of its structure really requires some serious editorial tightening to work effectively.
Yeah, I completely agree. As I understand it from the notes, the argument here is that AI acts as this, you know, hidden metabolism.
Right.
Like converting real-world resources, so water, land, energy, human labor, into these symbolic outputs like text and generated images. And the author builds this brilliant suspense by mapping out the hidden body of AI, right? Tracing the minerals mined from the earth all the way up to the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
But I found myself wondering, does the sheer volume of consecutive lists act like speed bumps that break that narrative tension? Because, I mean, every time I felt really invested in the physical reality of the tech, I was hit with, like, another 10-point diagnostic framework.
Oh, absolutely. The primary weakness in the current draft is that the paper introduces a massive cognitive load by stacking overlapping taxonomies on top of one another.
Yeah.
It's just so much.
It really is. And then a 10-part governance cycle, and finally, a 10-question use protocol. This heavy proliferation of lists just causes absolute conceptual fatigue.
Definitely.
It dilutes the core life coherence message because the paper starts to read somewhat like a textbook taxonomy rather than a persuasive, unified white paper. And I would honestly go a step further and suggest it's not just the volume of lists that exhaust the reader, but it's what those separate lists accidentally imply, you know?
Wait, what do you mean by that? Wow. Yeah, that's a really good point. It kind of fragments the very thing they're trying to unify.
Exactly. So the suggestion here is to consolidate the overlapping frameworks and clearly subordinate the remaining lists under one unified master structure. The author needs to eliminate the redundancies between the theoretical diagnostics and the practical applications, basically just allowing the underlying argument to breathe.
I can see what you're going for here. Let's look closely at the section discussing the governance models, specifically the 10-part governance cycle in Section 8, and then the 10-question life-coherent AI use protocol in Section 10. Yeah, let's look at those.
To me, these two sections look basically like twins. I mean, they cover almost identical ground discussing concepts like purpose, proportionality, life cycle responsibility, and justice. Could we simply mash these together into a master checklist?
Yes, that is a great approach. For a concrete example, merging Section 8 and Section 10 is exactly what needs to happen. Presenting them as a single governance and use protocol prevents the reader from having to learn two separate 10-step systems.
Right. Because nobody wants to memorize 20 steps.
No, exactly. When a reader encounters Section 8, they invest a lot of mental energy learning the theory of proportional use. If they then hit Section 10 a few pages later and have to relearn proportional use as a practical questionnaire, their eyes just glaze over. Fusing them translates the theory directly into action in real time.
Okay, so what I really like about this part is that it forces the theoretical to become practical instantly. But how do we handle the earlier, more abstract frameworks? Because the material makes a strong case for the dangers of AI becoming an enclosure like fencing off the public commons for private corporate gain.
Mm-hmm.
But getting there requires wading through 10 drivers of political economy in Section 6, and then a totally separate 5-part diagnostic in Section 7.
Right. So building on that point, what if we looked at it from the perspective of how those political drivers actually function in the real world? For another concrete example, we should integrate the 10 drivers of the political economy of demand from Section 6 directly into the 5-part diagnostic of enclosure and idle in Section 7.
Okay, how would that look?
Well, the weakness currently is that the drivers are listed as static concepts, things like cloud concentration or data scraping. Instead of listing them separately, the author should use them as the active mechanisms that turn AI from a benign tool into a hostile enclosure.
Right. So rather than just defining cloud concentration as, like, item number 4 on a list, you show it in action.
Yes, exactly.
You explain that when three major global companies own all the physical servers, they are literally building a fence around the digital economy. They force local businesses to pay rent for infrastructure they have absolutely no control over. That makes the concept dynamic, you know? It's not a vocabulary word, it's a weapon.
That is exactly the kind of active framing the paper needs. It shifts the burden away from the reader's memory and onto the narrative's momentum.
So if we take your advice and strip away all these redundant lists, what's left? We are going to have a lot of cleared space in the first half of this paper. We need something to fill that void. And I think the answer is basically hiding in the back of the document. We need to elevate the unique lived realities that make this paper special, rather than leaving them localized at the very end.
Integrating the Caribbean and small island developing states implications earlier and throughout the text would ground the abstract philosophical concepts in immediate lived stakes.
Yeah.
The critical weakness in the current draft is that the profoundly impactful and unique SIDS analysis, small island developing states, is completely sequestered in Section 9.
All the way at the end.
All the way at the end. And because of this isolation, the preceding 8 chapters feel highly theoretical. They are disconnected from the author's unique geographic and professional vantage point in the Caribbean. And because of that, those early chapters risk sounding like standard generic AI ethics discourse until the reader finally reaches the end of the document.
I have to admit some confusion as to why such a powerful, grounded reality is treated almost like a localized appendix. I mean, if we frame AI as an extractive resource demanding massive amounts of water and land, isn't the reality of a small island developing state the absolute perfect proof of concept?
Right.
Why wait until page 40 to reveal the highest stakes of the argument?
I wonder, though, if we've considered how keeping the Caribbean context isolated undermines the core thesis of the paper itself. Because the author argues that AI has a physical life ground, that it isn't magic, you know, it's minerals, water, and electricity.
Yeah, the physical reality.
Right. And if you don't show that physical ground early on, the reader just stays in the theoretical clouds. The suggestion here is to use the SIDS context as a continuous anchoring case study for the life ground concept throughout the entire paper. The author must prove the theories as they are introduced, not after the fact.
Let's visualize how that actually plays out in the text. In Section 3, the paper introduces the concept of the hidden metabolism and water stress. Currently, it speaks in global averages. But if we pull the Caribbean context forward as an example, we can paint a profoundly vivid picture. Like, a data center in Iceland might use naturally occurring ambient freezing air to cool its servers. But if you build a massive server farm on an island in the Caribbean, where does the cooling water come from during a seasonal drought?
Wow, yeah. The thermodynamics of that scenario are devastating, and that is exactly what needs to be in Section 3. For a concrete example, the text should immediately reference the Caribbean's freshwater limitations and its reliance on energy-intensive desalination.
Oh, man. Desalination.
Think about it. You have to burn imported fossil fuels to run a desalination plant, just to remove salt from seawater, just so you can run that fresh water over a server rack to keep an AI model cool, which then vents hot air back into an already warming tropical climate.
Jeez.
Right. That sequence proves to the reader exactly what is at risk. You aren't just talking about abstract carbon footprints anymore. You're talking about a fragile local water table being drained to generate, like, text summaries.
That takes the abstract concept of a water footprint and makes it a matter of local, physical survival. It anchors the theory beautifully. How does this apply to the social concepts later in the paper, like the idea of enclosure we were just talking about?
Well, for another concrete example, when the paper reaches the discussion of enclosure in Section 7, it should use the specific threat of the AI dependency trap for small island sovereignty as the primary illustration.
Okay.
Because public enclosure in the global south looks very specific. When external, foreign platforms control the digital infrastructure, the educational tools, and the public data of a small nation, that is the ultimate enclosure. The island essentially becomes a digital tenant to a foreign landlord.
And if we carry that thread all the way through to the solutions, it changes the tone of the entire document. When the author argues for public interest compute, they shouldn't just leave it as an academic ideal. They should explicitly introduce the idea of a shared Caribbean AI commons early on.
Yes.
If multiple island nations pooled their resources to build a localized, publicly owned server infrastructure, tailored to their specific scale and needs, that provides a really tangible example of regional infrastructure resisting corporate monopoly.
Is the connection between regional sovereignty and corporate monopolies fully established in the material, or is that an area to potentially bolster? Because once you establish that a Caribbean AI commons is necessary for survival, you inevitably run into a massive geopolitical roadblock.
Right, which brings us to the final hurdle. If small states are going to implement this life-coherent vision, relying on shared commons and refusing to participate in unchecked technological expansion, how does that philosophy actually survive the macro-geopolitical reality?
The proposed life-coherent governance framework needs a more robust engagement with the geopolitical counterarguments that drive relentless AI adoption. The weakness here is that the paper beautifully advocates for concepts like refusal, sufficiency, and maintaining a minimum sufficient symbolic form.
Mm-hmm.
Nations.
By treating AI expansion mostly as a corporate or cultural flaw, what it calls symbolic excess, the text neglects the hard security incentives driving nation states to scale AI at all costs. We are currently in what is effectively a global arms race.
Yeah. The material makes a strong case for the dangers of unbounded expansion by highlighting the Jevons paradox and efficiency without sufficiency.
Right, the idea that efficiency just leads to more consumption.
Exactly. The paper clearly explains that as AI models become more efficient and cheaper to run, we don't save energy, we just consume exponentially more AI, resulting in a massive net increase in energy usage.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to push back a bit here and play devil's advocate on behalf of a nation state. How does a philosophy of refusal actually survive when nations view AI monopolies as critical defense infrastructure?
That is the big question.
If you were a policymaker looking at cyber defense, predictive logistics, and intelligence analysis, you might look at this paper and say, well, I completely agree with the ecological math, but I cannot afford to be sufficient. My global adversaries are scaling frontier models, and if I refuse to participate, my country will be left defenseless.
Is there a risk that focusing solely on the ethical and ecological need for restraint might overlook those harsh realities of international relations?
Absolutely. It's a vital counterargument, and ignoring it makes the governance framework seem slightly politically naive.
Yeah. So the suggestion is to strengthen the governance argument by explicitly confronting the security versus sufficiency counterargument head on. The text needs to outline how public interest compute can realistically be achieved or defended amidst superpower AI monopolies and intense geopolitical competition.
That makes sense. But could the evidence also support a different conclusion? I mean, if we accept the premise of the paper that AI drains physical resources, then couldn't we argue that the arms race itself is what actually leaves a country defenseless? How do we weave that into the text?
Oh, that's fascinating. What are the potential limitations or counterarguments to the idea of an AI arms race? A powerful concrete example to fix this section is to add a dedicated subsection addressing the arms race counterargument directly.
Okay.
The author should acknowledge that while states feel compelled to scale AI for national security, unchecked material consumption degrades the actual physical security of the nation. If an AI arms race destabilizes your national power grid to the point of rolling blackouts and depletes your fresh water access during droughts, it makes your nation fundamentally less secure, not more.
That is a brilliant reframing. It takes the concept of national security out of the purely digital military realm and roots it back into the physical life ground we discussed earlier.
Yes.
Because, you know, you cannot defend a country that has no water or power. Framing life coherence, not as a moral sacrifice, but as a superior, more resilient security strategy, completely flips the policymaker's counterargument on its head.
Exactly. And once that new definition of security is established, the author needs to provide a concrete strategic pathway for implementation. For another example, going back to our Caribbean case study, how does a localized region actually negotiate with major cloud providers?
Right. How do they actually do it?
The paper should detail how regional bloc bargaining works. If a coalition of small island states approaches a tech monopoly, not as fragmented individuals, but as a unified commons with strict, life-coherent infrastructural demands, they possess real leverage. This moves the solution away from an idealistic plea for refusal and grounds it in practical geopolitical maneuvering.
So, a key theme running through this entire discussion seems to be connectivity. Not just the physical connectivity of the AI metabolism, but the narrative connectivity of the paper itself, you know?
Mm-hmm, totally.
The abstract taxonomies have to connect seamlessly to the governance checklists. The global theories of water and energy extraction have to connect to the lived, physical realities of the Caribbean. And the ethical call for sufficiency has to connect to the harsh, pragmatic realities of geopolitical security.
That alignment is exactly what transforms a collection of really interesting theories into an undeniable, actionable white paper. The foundation of Dr. Sahali's work is incredibly strong. It just requires a structural realignment to ensure the reader feels the stakes as deeply as the author does.
Let's briefly recap the three main takeaways from today's critique. First, streamlining the multiple diagnostic taxonomies to reduce the cognitive load, basically allowing the core argument of the paper to breathe.
Right.
Second, threading the high-stakes SIDS and Caribbean context throughout the entire document to ground the abstract theories in immediate physical reality. And third, directly addressing the geopolitical arms race counterargument to make the governance solutions practically robust for policymakers.
And to summarize the actionable suggestions you can implement in your next draft, combine the theoretical governance steps in Section 8 with the practical protocol checklists in Section 10 into one unified master structure. Move the island-specific water and enclosure examples out of their isolation in Section 9 and integrate them into the early definitions of the AI metabolism. And finally, draft a specific rebuttal addressing how to implement sufficiency in a globally competitive security environment, using the vulnerability of physical infrastructure as your primary counter-leverage.
We want to thank the author for submitting such a deeply insightful and urgently needed piece of work. The perspective offered here is vital. We invite you to implement these structural changes and submit the revised white paper back in again for further feedback.